Biden. Welcome back to another episode of What's in the Box, where we're talking about what we play in our cubes and what you should try out in yours. I'm one of your hosts, Drew, or Quad Nines. Here with another host, Zakil.
What's going on, everybody? Today is our Black episode. This is actually the second time we've recorded this because Shadows Over Innistrad actually, I think, had a pretty big impact on the color Black as a whole. And I think, you know, releasing the episode before the set come out, before the set came out and before we got to experience the new cards would have kind of been a disservice to the listeners. So, you know, I'm happy, you know, but apart from Cube, apart from the new set, apart from Black, what's been going on outside of Magic? Any new, or even personal in your Cube development, Cube endeavors, what's been going on?
Not a ton. Been trying to play a little bit more Cube. We've been trying a little bit of the, sealed type stuff because we can, seem to be able to do that a little bit faster than the drafts. So it's pretty interesting. You get to see somebody trying to build a red deck and they have Vortex over off to the side and you're like, why is that not in your deck? That seems like a mistake. But, we've been jamming some pretty fun games. Not a ton going on outside of Magic. Kids are going to be getting out of school pretty soon. So don't know if I'm looking forward to that or not.
Nice. Yeah, I'm still slowly working on my foil unhinged basic mana base. Like, I'm trying to get like one a week or something, one every other week. It's gonna take me a year or so, but we're getting there. We're up to a couple islands now, which is nice. They're like $80 each, so one step at a time. But
yeah, get those out of the way first, huh?
All I hope is that if they ever make it unhinged too, they're at least separate, they're different art. I highly doubt they'd print the same art, but if they're the same art, I'm going to probably lose my mind, so.
I understand.
But anyway, so let's get into the Black episode here. I guess starting off here, what do you think the color Black does specifically in Magic, and then what do you think it does specifically in Cube?
Number one, kill things. And then number two is probably make you throw away the things that your opponent wants to play. So basically, kill spells a discard is my first thoughts. But it does a lot more than that, but that's my first thoughts on it. Mm-hmm.
I would probably say the same, and reanimation. A little bit more in Cube, but I think overall of Magic, I think only really Black and Old School White have reanimation, if I recall correctly.
Yes, there are a couple of white spells I know of at least one resurrection that brings them back. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, it is more prevalent in Cube because obviously, like, the only halfway decent reanimate type spell in Modern is Barrel Rites, I guess. So, yeah, they kind of figured out real fast that one and two mana spells that bring stuff back from the graveyard is probably too strong.
Yep. So yeah, so Black, I think we kind of just should start the discussion off with archetypes. I guess the one we just talked about, the biggest and baddest archetype in all of Cube is probably Reanimator. You get to do really dumb things as fast as you can, and usually when you reanimate something, the game doesn't last another turn or two. What do you think are the key pieces of this archetype?
Well, I mean, you've got to be able to get them in the yard, so short of opening an entomb, you need something like just a discard outlet. It could be like a looter, could be something like Liliana, where you get to pitch it to her plus one, anything like that. There's not really much self-mill, really, but you know, probably you want to have enablers, and the key being getting them in the yard first.
Do you have a specific color that you often play Reanimator? Like that you splash for Reanimator when you're playing Black?
I mean, definitely blue, but usually some kind of Grixis type deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe so. I think blue is probably the best because you get access to Show and Tell, you get access to the cantrips and discard spells, like you were saying, the Jaces, the looters. I've also seen red-black because you get access to Sneak Attack and sometimes people play Through the Breach and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once again, Grixis probably gives you the best access to everything. I'm trying to think of the reanimation spells in Cube. where do you think the line is for good enough to play and kind of a little loose?
Well, I mean, like I said, Unbarrel Rights gets a pass because of the flashback. Mm-hmm. And the other, you know, synergies with like Gifts Ungiven and stuff like that. But I mean, if I had to rank them, it'd be like, of course, Reanimate, Animate Dead, and Exhume. Exhume may be the last one in, usually, because sometimes your opponent gets put something in play, sometimes they don't. And then, you know, you've got your stuff like your Corpse Dance and Necromancy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Exhume's probably my last one in, because I like those other two more, even more than Exhume, even though Exhume is pretty cheap at 2 mana. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever play, Living Death?
I do. I recorded, for YouTube going over my black section last night. And I was talking about, you know, sometimes it's a board wipe, sometimes it's a mass reanimator spell, sometimes a little of both. But I actually kind of think of it more as a board wipe.
Yeah, I do too, yeah.
With, you know, some synergies if you play your deck right. But yeah, it's pretty good. Like I said, it's being able to kill everything they have. I think it may be a little bit more important than even bringing your stuff back. Unless, you know, you've got something like a Urabrass that gives all your stuff haste and you just crush them. So.
Yeah, so actually, let's talk about those. Quick plug here. You did, as I understand it, you're breaking down your cube on YouTube and just kind of showing each section of your cube, and of course, we get to see all the crazy foils and stuff like that. Give the listeners, you know, where can they find that? Just out of curiosity, and I know that yesterday you had just released the black episode in anticipation for this episode as well.
Yeah, I was of course wanting to update it because I knew we were going to be doing this, and. Thought, well, might as well start with black. That I've got it fresh in my mind. It's on my YouTube channel. It's Quad Nines. I tried to make it short and it didn't work. It was like 20 minutes, but, it's just, you know, I see scars like, oh, well, this combos with this and, I like playing it with this deck and all that. So, I realized that it had been probably a year and a half since I'd done like an overview of my cube. Like I did a lot of the pickup videos and stuff like that, but I wanted to go through the entire like color sections and everything, just to give people an idea, like, you know, what makes up a cube. You have to kind of have a curve and you want to have, like you were talking, you want to have a critical number of reanimate type spells, or it's not really an archetype. You know, if there's only two reanimation spells, you can't build a deck around that. So. Just little stuff like that.
Nice. And would I dare say that there's a possibility that from now on, every time we do a color, a accompanying YouTube video will come out? Possibly of them? Or already be out?
Yeah, probably will already be out. I don't know that I can wait that that long. I get kind of in the mood to do videos. And since I was updating my cube for Shadows on Riverstride, and, you know, having to type everything in on CubeTutor and just the card version and all that, I'm like, well, I'll just do this now. But, yeah, there'll definitely be one for each color, you know, multicolor and artifact and all that. Should be over the next couple of weeks. So there should be one to go watch or listen to, whatever you want to do, to accompany our reviews.
Nice. Okay, so... talking about black, let's continue the archetype discussion. There's a couple archetypes in black. The big one being, or I guess the most controversial one being aggro. This is the one I think we'll probably spend the most time on because black aggro has seen a lot of changes, got a lot of hate. You know, it's been experimented with. It's kind of been shoved and combined into tribal. Sometimes people usually, like, it's not... When I think of black aggro, it's not necessarily a color that I just like mono black aggro. I often think black red aggro because red does it, I think, a bit more efficiently. And you're not as most of the black one drops and most of the black two drops that are aggressive have a significant drawback, which in red is not the case. I just want to kind of actually go over each black aggro card, and then we'll go... Well, actually, let's go over the archetype first, and then I want to individually talk about each card, because there's one of two problems happening, I think, in a lot of cube lists. And the first one is that for aggro, I don't think people run enough aggro cards. Like, you need a lot of one drop and two drop cards to reach the critical mass to be able to support those archetypes. Pardon me, I can't talk today. But yeah, so black aggro, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear this?
Well, like, you know, you got your can't block but usually hard to deal with type creatures, like your blood gas or your blood soaked champion. Like you're talking about, there's a drawback normally with the black, you know, aggressive creatures, and it's usually that they can't block or they end the battlefield tapped. I was looking at my, I think I'm running 5 black one drops. So blood soaked, can't block. Diagraph Ghoul comes in tapped. Gravecrawler can't block. Gnarled Scarhide, although you can put it on a creature, either it or the creature you put it on, can't block. The only other one is Gul'draz Assassin, which is a little different card. It's really just, you know, removal on a stick, until you take over the game. Mm-hmm. Looking even to two drops, the aforementioned Bloodghast, which can't block. Imagine that. But then there's a couple little bit better cards coming out recently. You've got the Heir of Falconwrath, which is a very aggressive black two drop. Even Relentless Dead, which we had mentioned before. It has menace and other abilities that are helpful, but it's just a 2/2 for 2 black and no drawback, mm-hmm. which is really weird, but very welcome for black. I think it's really going to help out. And then you've got a lot of utility type stuff, like your Vampire Hexmage, which is a very aggressive card. It's got first strike, but, you know, normally it's to kill target planeswalker. And then, of course, you can always just pack rat somebody out.
Yes.
Yeah. Bad when sometimes a one card, 39 swamp deck is almost a better aggro strategy than, you know, all the one drops you can get.
Yeah. Speaking of the new cards, I think one of the biggest improvements was actually before Shadows of Ur Innistrad. It was in Battle for Zendikar. We got a really nice 3-drop black vampire in Drana. And mm-hmm. I mean, I really think this is what the curve wanted. There's been a bunch of cards like Liliana, the Flip Liliana, and Mardu Strike Leader, which is a perfectly reasonable card, Flesh Carver and Ophiomancer. But Drana is something that I think just goes wide and can take the game over and just end it very quickly, while a lot of these other cards are just kind of attrition value, like an attrition value decks, more Jundi, more mid-rangey. Another one drop that comes to mind is Vampire Interloper. Is this the one I'm thinking of?
It's the 2/2 where you lose a life a turn unless your opponent's life total is 10 or less. Yes.
Yeah. So that card I think is pretty good. Carnifage, of course, is a classic. I'm not sure if that quite makes the list anymore, but there's a lot of really good aggressive creatures in black. I think the biggest problem is, one, it's not as supported because the cards just aren't as exciting. It really sucks when you open up a pack and you see, like, Talarian Academy and, you know, Grim Monolith and Jace the Mind Sculptor and Mana Drain and a Gnarled Scarhide.
Yeah, and you're like, this will wheel, and then I still won't want to take it.
Exactly. Go ahead, pardon me.
Oh, I was going to say, you're mentioning Drana, and really since Battle for Zendikar, and then Oath of the Gatewatch, we got another good vampire in Cletus, and then the more vampires and a couple of zombies in Shadows of Innistrad, and everything's, you know, 4 or less, like with Cletus being the only real 4-drop, and everything else is cheaper, which is very good, and they do kind of have some tribal synergies. There's quite a good number of vampires, and they added a couple zombies in there, like to help, like, with your Gravecrawler, you know, effects if you run that guy. So you don't have to go full on tribal, but I think it helps in some situations just enough to kind of get him in there. Because in New York you got one of my favorite 4-drops in black, which is Bloodline Keeper. Mm-hmm. Was my favorite card to open in Innistrad Limited.
That and Liliana were unbeatable. Unless your opponent had an Invisible Stalker, then you may lose.
Yeah. So, like I say, it's small little tribal things, but nothing It's just a little bonus here and there, but nothing that you have to get a ton of them to make it worth something. Most of the cards are decent on their own. Something like a, you know, Gatekeeper of Malakir, which is a creature, but it's really an edict on a 2/2. You just have to pay 3 mana for it.
On top of all that, one of the synergies you were just talking about in Zombies, Grey Merchant. You know, usually I don't really think of 5 drops when I think of an aggressive deck, but especially in black where the color costing is so demanding, most of the times it's double black in a lot of the cards on their 3 drops and on their 2 drops. And of course their 1 drops are recurring, so being able to play Grey Merchant of Asphodel is oftentimes like a 6 or 7 point life swing. Especially if you have something like Relentless Dead that lets you recur that. Just out of curiosity, do you know, do Pack Rat tokens each give devotion?
They, if it's still the same it was when it was in Standard, they do. Because it copies the card, you know, everything. So it counts the black pip on it, because that was one of the big things when it was in Standard, that you would play the Grey Merchant with a bunch of Pack Rats out. That would all count. So
yeah, I thought so, but I couldn't. Yeah. I didn't know if they may have changed it, or maybe there's, you know, there's a couple new rules. Anyway, but
Grey Merchant's kind of like the black Fireball. I mean, it can be a big life swing, and the life gain really helps out, because one thing that black does is it trades life for resources. Mm-hmm. So the life gain definitely helps.
Okay, so so if there was one piece of advice for someone trying to support black aggro, or aggressive decks in general, and then specifically black, what would you give? Or what would it be?
Really, evasion? That was one of my biggest pet peeves about Carnifage, was like, yeah, you might get it out there and it gets in there for 2 or 4 points of damage, but then all of a sudden you're like tapping it every turn, because it can't get in there. Like, that's why the cards like, you know, Relentless Dead with Menace or Drana with Flying, you know, stuff like this. The evasion is the key to getting in those last points of damage. Or like, say, in red, you've got something like Haste. You know, some of the Gruul cards are like Trample, stuff like that. But in black, really helps when you've got something with evasion, even if the numbers are a little bit worse over, you know, just a vanilla 2/1 for 1 or 3/1 for 2 with no evasion. I definitely think you want to prioritize that over other things.
Mm-hmm. My piece of advice would probably be synergy. This reminds me of way back, was this last year, we had Randy Bueller on discussing the changes when they kind of first revamped the Legacy Cube. And they took out a lot of powerful stuff. And they're like, we want to make black aggro a thing. And they tried Tribal Vampires. And as much as it, you know, it seemed like a bad idea and it seemed kind of loose, but I think that was with merit. Like, I think that was an honest effort to try to change black. And once again, if we had the Shadows Over Innistrad cards at that time, I think it actually probably would have been pretty playable. And I know that you actually drafted it a couple times and did fairly well.
I did, actually. It was, and like you said, if you'd had, like, take out a couple of the big 5 and 6 drop, like, Lord type creatures that you didn't really want, and add in a couple of 1 and 2 drops, and it's a deck, you know?
And, yeah, I mean, once again, the synergies with reassembling Skeleton, Relentless Dead, Grey Merchant, another cool splash thing is Purphoros, I think, is really good in these kind of decks, because, once again, you can use reassembling Skeleton, you can use all kinds of stuff. The token with Pack Rat and so on and so forth. But I don't necessarily think black aggro has to be a splash color. I just think that if you're going to try to support mono black aggro, you need to have a lot of synergy, because I think the individual card quality in comparison to the ceiling cards like Chase the Mind Sculptor and stuff, it's just a bit too low. So you need the individual cards to be pretty good, and then you need the overall synergy to just be better. So that's something we kind of continue to develop and continue to look into as sets come out. And our last review, we talked about Relentless Dead, and we said it's a card that just gets better over, you know, through time. The more zombies they make, you know, the more specific cool interactions that they make, the better the card gets. It's kind of like Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah, that's exactly the card I was thinking of. Like, Stoneforge was, nobody gave it a second glance when it came out, because, you know, where are you going to go get, like, a Bone Splitter or maybe a Loxodon Warhammer, you know? Mm-hmm. But Yeah, once like every time a new card gets printed that has an interaction, it just some of these cards just get better and better.
But okay, we actually, so 2 months ago when we first recorded this podcast, I posted on Reddit asking questions specifically about Black and what you guys wanted to hear. So I'm going to read off some of these now. We'll kind of go over them. Senior Mortgage asks, talk about Black X Sacrifice archetype, Braids, Exploit Cards, Attrition, and Friends, and their enablers like Ophiomancer, and utility bodies like Bone Shredder and such. It's one of my favorites. And that leads us into our next archetype, which is Pox, Smokestack, that kind of value-based decks. Where do these lie? What's included in these strategies for those who may not be too familiar with them?
Well, it's one of those decks that sometimes like you just get insta wins. Like the deck you're playing against has no outs to what you're doing if it comes together. For example, like say you, one of the big keys is hand disruption, which is weird. I guess you could say that for any black deck, but like if you can, strip one key card out of their hand and then land something like a Braids, generally black is able to get ahead of the sacrifice type stuff that's supposed to be symmetrical, because you've got recursion with like your Bloodghast, your Gravecrawler. Ophiomancer. Ophiomancer is such a value card just because, like, they're never going to get ahead of mana on that card. It's 3 mana, and they're going to have to take 2 cards to get rid of it unless they have a board wipe. And then, okay, they just spent their best board wipe to get rid of my 3-drop, and I just play off the rest of my hand.
Yeah.
So, it's... And, yeah, like, you only get one snake at a time. That's really all you need. Like, they can't attack. You've got sacrifice fodder. If you have something like a smokestack, you don't have to crank it up too high because it's not hurting you at all, and your opponent's having to lose a little bit every turn. Mm-hmm. Like
bitter,
the same thing.
Bitter Blossom is another great card in these synergies or in these archetypes. Mm-hmm.
Between recursion and the token making ability and some of the black cards, like you mentioned, it's one of my favorite ones. And like I said, if I can get a Hymn to Turok on somebody, all the better. I still run Sinkhole, and a lot of people have cut it, but sometimes you just get them.
People
you know.
Cut that card?
Yeah, like some people don't like land destruction in general. I'm not those people. Like, I will Armageddon you and smile at you.
Who are
and
these
just like,
people?
I don't know. They're they get they're also the same people that get mad when you counterspell their creature, but it's okay when they lightning bolt. Your creature. I can't counter yours, but you can kill my guy. I don't say that's different. But.
Yeah. The Pox strategy is something that I've experimented with a little bit, and I played kind of a couple of different flavors in it. One of them was black white, in which you get to play cards like Parallax Wave and Balance. If you go a little bit deeper, just because it's really about triggers in that kind of deck where it's like, okay, Parallax Wave, then cast Pox, and I'll exile my best card and then exile the Parallax Wave or that kind of stuff like that. Another good card is just the token strategies because you can, like, I'll sacrifice one creature, one of this or whatever. And in reality, once again, it's either a Death Touch, Ophiomancer token, it's just a Soldier token or whatever it is. And theirs could have been an Elf or an aggressive card or even like a good solid mid-range card that they're like, whoops, uh-oh. This is another deck that Tarmogoyf shines in. I know a lot of people aren't big on Goyf in Cube, and I think it's because you don't run Goyf in a green deck ever. even in Modern, even in Legacy, I don't think Tarmogoyf is ever really in any like predominantly green decks. It's usually always paired with black. Possibly sometimes even paired with blue, depending on the version of the deck. But the black-green attrition-based strategies, Tarmogoyf is insane in. Of course, like Eternal Witness are insane in. So that's something I've had a lot of fun with. I think it's a really solid archetype. And once again, a lot of the black cards, like you were just saying, have that recursion built into them. Liliana is through and through a Pox strategy, pretty much. After a while, you just don't... neither player has a hand, and you can sacrifice... make them sacrifice a creature if they resolve something that's a little dangerous, and they have the ulti. Like, oh.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think I've ever lost a game where ultimate is Liliana, But I have lost the match where I ultimated Karn, so that's strange. And Ugin, come to think of it. Ugin was because I decked myself, but, you know, my opponent's life total really high. But anyway, I digress. Liliana, like you said, it's like, oh, okay, I'll pitch this Grave Guard.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Or even better, like you're talking about Black-White, pitch this Lingering Souls. Oh, you're pitching your 3-drop? Sad for you. Okay. And then, like, you know, Black, of course, Liliana is a great Planeswalker, probably top 2 or 3, 4 maybe all time.
I think three. Couple, well, how would you rank them? I think Jace, Dak, Liliana.
Well, Dak's a tough sell because he's not legal in anything people really play.
True.
Like,
if he was, he'd be broken good.
Oh, if he was modern legal? Oh gosh. I want to visit wherever Trest is so I can get my Edric modern print, and then Dak can go visit there and they can print him too. And I'll just be happy.
Yep.
But anyway, back to Black. One of the keys about adding white to your Black deck is you get possibly three very strong Planeswalkers in Sorin. Any of the Black-White Sorins are really good. Two of them more so in the, you know, Pock Sacrifice type because they make tokens. Like I said, you can pair Black with a bunch of different colors. Probably with the Sacrifice type style, you're going to go with white. But any of the, you know, junk, like I said, Black-Green X, decks, there's so much value you can get from pitching stuff and recurring it, like with your Eternal Witness.
Another two cards that have came out in the past year, Marin of Clan Nel'Toth is absurd in this deck, and the Gitrog Monster is absurd in this deck. I'll draw some cards, sure.
Gitrog is, like, you have to kill that thing so fast. Like, you cannot let them untap and get that trigger where they get to just throw a land away. Or sack land and draw more cards. It's just, and then they get to play two lands a turn. So that card's got so many abilities and keywords on it. And on top of that, it's got Death Touch. I mean, did it really have to have Death Touch?
Yeah.
And then of course you've got one of the best legacy and modern cards too in Abrupt Decay.
Oh yeah.
So, I guess we kind of branched off into more of a multicolored thing, but you know,
it's still
black is a really good splash color, which, in the case of red also, sometimes it's to its detriment because anybody's going to take that lightning bolt because, you know, they can splash it. Well, anybody's going to take the Doomblade. If they have any access to black, it's cheap removal. Discard.
Thoughtseize, Damnation, these cards. They're premium removal cards. They're premium. Yeah, they're very efficient in what they do.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the cards do have a lot of black pips on them, like, you know, your Liliana or something like that. But then some of the cards are very splashable, and that's what the difference between my really good black decks and my so-so black decks are when I get the cards that everybody wants, like your Thoughtseize and your Doomblade, stuff like that. And then because, you know, you can wield the other black cards that nobody else is looking for. And that's when your deck gets strong.
So let's take a moment and talk specifically about discard. One of the comments on Reddit was SteveMan64 says, black is usually the backbone to most stacks lists and does well in any attention. I think he meant to say attrition-based deck. Don't forget to talk about the discard spells. So let's just go over the discard spells because, pardon me, you know, everyone knows about Thoughtseize. Everyone knows about Inquisition. I actually don't own an Inquisition, funny enough, because I never bought one. I was like, this card's like $10, whatever. And then it spiked up to like $40. It's like, I'm definitely not going to buy one now.
Yeah, it's still like in the 20s, and it's probably getting reprinted, but still, it's like how this. It was more than Thoughtseize for a good long while, which is crazy.
Like, well, okay, whatever. But, you know, Hand Disruption is usually in every set. Like, I think Duress is a very fair card. But some people, you know, the power level of your cube may not be, you know, the power tier one super combo heavy kind of cube list. So what are some alternatives to running, you know, the big stuff like Thoughtseize, the big stuff like Mind Twist and Him? Because Him is a pretty unfun card. And I understand why people are not, you know, maybe not like it too much. What is the card? I think it's from New Phyrexia. I think you discard a creature or a planeswalker. Maybe it's not.
Yeah, it was Despise. It was reprinted in Cons, maybe?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, because it had Zergo and Sarkhan face-to-face. But yeah, it's discard target or discard creature or planeswalker, mm-hmm. which is essentially the opposite address. So with the planeswalker tacked on. But, you know, it's a good card, but I haven't ran it in a long time. Just, I don't know. Of course, since that card came out, they've added cards like Hero's Downfall. Ruinous Path, which I don't actually like, but you know, there's other ways of getting rid of planeswalkers. When that card was printed, a lot of times the resolved planeswalker, if you couldn't attack into it, you had no way of getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's also cards that, are creatures with the discard type effect. You've got, Lifebane Zombie, which is just a beating, cause there's a 3-1 Intimidate is great. On its own, and then just like probably 40% of the time you just randomly get a creature exiled from it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you're saying, the keys with the really OP discard are Mind Twist and the Turok, and the big difference is the word random. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you can get
their lands.
You might get their lands or like, I don't know, their one big spell they had, and it's just, no other discard spell maybe could have gotten it, you know? I don't know. But it's a 2-for-1. It, like, almost all, like, Mind Twist is usually more than that, but him's always a 2-for-1, so. It's definitely, Duress is a very, very fair card by comparison.
Mm-hmm. And there's an excellent article I was looking on Reddit the other day, and someone had asked, what are the best MTG articles of all time? I think one of them that was, you know, the most popular voted was Reed Duke's Thought Sees You. And
mm-hmm.
he goes in, and I'll put it in the show notes down below because it's a really interesting article. And he goes in talking about the details and intricacies of Thought Sees and what it means to play it in your deck. Because you don't play Thought Sees in a deck that, like in a mono red deck. And it sounds good because you're like, okay, I'll get rid of their best card and play a one drop. But in reality, it's not what you want to be doing because each one of your cards in aggressive strategies wants to deal damage or wants to put a creature on the board. So playing something, you know, the reason Thoughtseize is so good in mid-range strategies like Jund and Modern and, you know, of course, Jund and Legacy and whatever it is because your entire deck benefits from having not only that specific card in the graveyard with Tarmogoyf and with Delirium cards and stuff like that, or Delve in Tasigur, but disrupting your opponent is more important than anything because your curve starts at 3 or starts at 2.5. The curves that start at 1 can't really benefit from that because it means they're essentially a turn behind and a card down. So it's interesting. It was a really interesting article. It's really long. But for those interested, I'll put it down in the comments. So I'm actually on Cube Tutor looking at the top peasant cards, because I think peasant is a really interesting kind of way to look at cube. Once you get into cube for so long, you start to see just the same lists. Like, okay, of course everyone runs Jace and all that stuff. But when you get into the pauper and peasant world, you start to see cards that are pretty good alternatives. So for example, Unearth, I think is a pretty reasonable reanimation spell.
It's a mana cost 3 or less, is that right?
3 or less, yeah, and has the opportunity to cycle. Ashes to Ashes is a pretty good removal spell. Night's Whisper and Sign and Blood are two cards that, you know, may not see play in every cube, but they're perfectly reasonable. Trying to think here. Necromancy and Diabolic Servitude.
Yeah, another one that I just added back to my cube is reanimation type spells is Makeshift Mannequin.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a common from Lorwyn, I believe. And it's one of the few cards that can reanimate an Eldrazi. Because you can pitch it to whatever discard outlet you have, and with the trigger on the stack, bring it back. And it has this little, you know, thing that says it has a counter on it. If it becomes the target of a spell, then you have to sacrifice it. The key being, if you do that to Emrakul, it has protection from most things that could target it. So you're just going to kill them anyway, and you do it on instep. So anyway, it's kind of a fun one if you want to kind of turn up the notch on being able to bring the Eldrazi back in or get cheat them in a little bit faster.
Definitely. So, okay, here, moving on to the next question, Code Mage asks, tutors or not, and which ones? And then also, why are their creatures so bad? So let's focus on tutors here first. What tutors, we actually talked about this before the show, too, about one specific tutor. But what tutors do you run in Q?
I would guess I'd run a couple and a half, I'll say, because one of them is Booster Tutor. Which isn't a real card, but it's pretty awesome. You know, we do it where you get a 7-card pack randomly from the cube, mm-hmm. and that's just your same pack for the entire draft.
So 7 cards. Oh, and you keep it with the same pack. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, like you don't get to know what's in it until the first time you cast Booster Tutor, but you keep the same 7 cards, and it's basically like a tutor sideboard for the rest of the event or whatever. But yeah, we used to try it with 15 cards, and it was so good. So, like, 7 cards is kind of the sweet spot that I've talked to other people about it, and that's kind of what they've come to, too. So besides that one, which is a kind of different thing, I run Vampiric Tutor, Demonic Tutor, I'm sorry, Demonic Tutor, which is obviously to me, it's the best. Just because it goes right to your hand, you don't reveal it, doesn't cost life. It is sorcery, but... okay, it's 2 mana. I don't care. The other ones I run now are Dark Petition, which I've been really happy with, especially in Storm decks.
Let's talk about Dark Petition.
Yeah, it's crazy good.
Yeah, I haven't been able to play it with it in Cube. It's probably, can you, I mean, I'm assuming it's a card you can just obviously play out of Storm as long as you have the Delirium.
Was it Spellmastery on that one? Yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah, Spellmastery.
And you're gonna, in any kind of, you know, black control-y deck with either a combo win or like a one big finisher, you're going to get spell mastery either from cantrips or kill spells or discard spells, you know, so you're going to have a couple sorceries in there. And like I said, in Storm, it's because you've had Storm decks like with Snapcaster and without Snapcaster.
Yeah.
With Snapcaster are way better.
Same with Yogg-Will. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Same thing. This one is the fact that it gives you back the 3 mana is just huge. And of course you could say that, well, if you just had, you know, Demonic Tutor, you'd have the mana anyway. But I don't know. It's just really good. And, you know, at worst, it's a 5 mana tutor, which is not great, but still it's the second version of your best.
Always a second copy of your best card.
And the other one would be Sidisi Undead Visitor.
Yeah.
The 4/6 Death Touch, which has got a great, you know, stats. Death Touch 4/6. You don't even have to sack anything if you don't want to tutor, but like we were talking about earlier, you've got this Bloodghast sitting there. You've got this Gravecrawler sitting there. Gravecrawler especially because you can sack it and then bring it back because Sidisi is a zombie. So,
Do you play the 7, is it Runescar Demon that I'm thinking of?
I have before. It's not in there currently. It's pretty good. It's just
like a 7-mana guy, and it comes in, you can tutor, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't remember if there's any other effects, but yeah.
Yeah, that's really stupid when you have something like a clone effect or progenitor mimic or Venzer blanket, resto blanket. Yeah. You know, but at the same time, it is 7 mana.
7 mana, yeah. So it's
like, if it's 7 mana, like, what are you trying to tutor for? I just cast a 7-mana spell that's a 6/6 flyer. Like, you know, it's almost gravy. Love it in EDH, though, and I do like it okay in Q, but it's kind of like the blue version from that same set, Sphinx of Uthun.
Yeah.
You know, had a fact of fiction tacked onto it for 7 mana. So both are really good, but probably a little bit too expensive if you're playing them fairly anyway.
So there's one tutor that we were talking about before the show, and that's mm-hmm. Imperial Seal. I'm not actually sold on Imperial Seal being a good card. I've ran one for a while I don't actually own the card. It's a proxy only because it's so rare, mm-hmm. and it kind of fits the theme of like the super rare high powered cube. But if I was to have an optimal list, I don't know if I would actually include it.
I don't think I would. Like, I've been trying to stay away from it because, you know, all the Portal cards have been slowly getting reprinted over the last couple of years. And I'm like, I'm not dropping, you know, a few hundred dollars on it to get reprinted and be able to get one for like $50 in a pack, so, you know, or
I could see this card getting reprinted in Eternal Masters.
Yep. And like I said, it's a, whatever you want, bad vampiric tutor, bad demonic tutor. It's still not bad, not horrible. It's just probably the third or fourth best tutor. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go on to the next question here. how to balance the inclusion, or sorry, Wox1510 asks, how to balance the inclusion of devotion cards, Messenger, Obliterator, Grey Merchant, Coffers, etc., versus inclusions that let Black play well with others? And that's a really good question because, obviously, if you have if every black creature costs 3 black mana or 4 black mana, it's pretty hard to splash. So how would you go about this if this was something you're worried about in your cube?
Hope your opponent has an Urborg. no, it's just like the 2 pip ones, especially like Grey Merchant, which is a 5 drop, usually not that big a deal. It's the ones, like you said, like the Messenger or Obliterator, you know, that you really have to have, you know, good fixing and pretty much have to be mono black to play those cards. Liliana, you know, usually you're not casting that on turn 3. You know, if you are, great, but you don't really plan on it with the double black and the casting cost. Unless, like I said, you are very, very majority black in your mana base. But yeah, I kind of like some of the devotion cards. I did take Obliterator out a while back. It's still out. I added Grey Merchant just because, you know, even in just a deck not built around it, it's still going to get you probably 4, you know, 4 drain and then gain 4, so 8-point life swing. It's pretty good. Trying to think what else. Of course, a lot of the black 2-drops are double black, you know, same as like the white 2-drops. The black 2-drops are double black, so.
Yeah.
Those can definitely help in your stuff like that. Which I run Nykthos in my cube. Don't know if you do, but I've been pretty happy with it.
Yeah. So,
especially if you want to rip off a mind twist for a ton of mana.
Yeah, that is true. I'm thinking, so to balance the devotion so that black isn't obnoxious, I think you also just have to include a lot of the staple cards and identify which cards are more for black and which cards are more splashable, because I actually don't think I ever played Dark Confidant in black decks. Personally. I mean, I just never, it's always in like a black blue deck or a black green deck or something like that, or black red.
Yeah, it's one of like 3 black cards and like,
yeah,
you said, like,
like a Tutor, a Liliana, and Bob. Like, oh, that's good enough. Or Thoughtseize or something. Like, good draft. So that, and, you know, utility cards like Ophiomancer, like Fleshcarver. And Fleshcarver is a card that doesn't get enough love, I think.
It really doesn't. It's so good, but like the ideal setup for it just usually doesn't come together, and I don't know why. But the few times it has come together, it's like, this card's amazing.
My biggest problem with black creatures all around is that their 4-drops are kind of weird to me. Necrotal and, Shriekma is technically a 5, but Necrotal and Skin Render and stuff are good when they're good, but really bad when they're not.
Yeah, they've got a pretty wide range of floor to ceiling on that, whereas something like the newer one, Cletus, if you cast it and they don't kill it, it's going to get you value. So, what was that one? Skin Render. I've become a bigger fan of it recently, too.
It is good. But there are times, because it has it's not a May ability, so there are times that you just can't play it into an empty board.
Oh, yeah. I've many times had, like, they've got one creature, and I'll go to play Skin Render, and they'll just kill their own creature in response just, it's like, just because.
Oh, this card's so bad. Yeah, I don't know. That if there's something that I wish Black had more of, it'd be better four drops, a better Planeswalker. Like another, I want another Liliana of the Veil crazy Planeswalker because Blue has a bunch of them. And like really solid aggressive cards. I don't need, like, the spells are fine. The black spells are just stupid good. I don't care about spells. Give us good permanence.
Yeah, and they've also probably got some of the better enchantments. Like you said, outside of Liliana, and Obnixilus was a good step for the Planeswalkers. It's a good card.
I think
just not as good as like the third or fourth best blue Planeswalker, you know?
Definitely a tier two Planeswalker, but he does what he does his job very well. So, yeah. You know, it's fine. But yeah, go ahead. Pardon me. I cut you off. I just realized we talked about Reanimator and we didn't mention Recurring Nightmare.
Yes, that's one of my favorite cards because it is exactly what it says it is. Like, if your opponent can't deal with it, it just keeps coming back, and it's such a bad day for your opponent. It's so bad.
The way that it's worded, too, also makes it, like, really obnoxious.
Yeah. There may be a better feeling than, like, sacking a two-drop to get back Grave Titan, but I can't think of it right now. So, I mean, I guess Gristlebrand, but, you know, Grave Titan's just like, this is a fair magic card. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink. Oh, by the way, I've got 10 power, you're dead, like pretty much next turn, so, yeah. And if you kill it, I just sack a zombie and bring him back and get two more zombies. It's just like, you can't, if you resolve a Recurring Nightmare and get activated, it's just so good.
There's one, and let's actually talk about, I'm going to go back to Reanimator, because I actually don't think we did it enough justice. What reanimation targets, apart from like just the small stuff, do you think are kind of quote-unquote acceptable in Cube? Because you can, you know, when I think of Reanimator, they're always playing something like Grizzlebrand. They'll usually play like an Iona or Elesh Norn or something. And Iona isn't a card that I run, because more than anything, I think it's just a stupid card.
When it's good, it's too good. Like you stop playing Magic. It's like, it's kind of resolving a Blood Moon against Jund in Modern. Like we quit playing. We're done now. Like we'll keep playing a few more turns. I'll draw and look upset and then pass the turn. But you resolve an Iona against most decks, and if you have any sense of what to name, it's over. So, as far as like, I would say something not even really in black, but if you're talking about like a smaller reanimator target, something like the white Armin Akan type creatures, like even something as fair, I guess I'll say, as Cloud Goat or Brahmaz or Hero of Bladehold. Like I said, all the Armin Akan white creatures. Then there's also, I do like blowing up lands. So, I mean, I've even done so much as like cast a Avalanche Rider, blow their land up, sack him, and then cast Exhume, bring back my Avalanche Rider, kill your other land. Mm-hmm. And then, like, they're just stuck on, like, one or two lands for quite a few turns. It doesn't really matter what I do, because they can't do anything. So,
I think Elesh Norn is pretty... I mean, I think it's a fair card for 7 mana. It'll kill things, but it's not... Like, you can beat an Elesh Norn. I've done it.
If they're casting it for 7 mana, yes, you can beat it.
Yeah. You can beat a Grizzlebrand because they have to pay life. Like, usually when you pay life to draw cards in most formats, the game's over. But in Cube, the variance is so high that you, like, may have to draw 14 cards, and then you could go to 6, or you could be at, like, 3 life, and it's like, oh, do I have the Bolt or something like that? And there's a cool game played there. Grizzlebrand is probably the highest, like, the absolute highest ceiling that I would ever put in Cube. Just because beating it is really, really unlikely, and if you do, the other guy just kind of had, you know, his deck just kind of fell apart. But, yeah, I don't know. It's something definitely to experiment with, because you can also play stuff like Terastodon, which is another card I don't run. Now, there are two cards in all of Magic that I don't run because of looks. I don't like the way Terastodon looks. And because I've seen that card so many times, I just don't like it. Like, it's literally in any time they're like, let's put a big dumb idiot in a set, this Terastodon.
Sure.
I just don't like that card, and I don't like a Johnny Goldmane. And it's really funny because that card's super good. I just hate the art. Like, it just looks stupid. So it's never
actually just picked up one of the Pro Tour Johnny Goldmanes.
Yeah.
And I like that art. Okay. I didn't really notice it before, but I like that much better than the old art. But, okay. We were talking about Griselbrand a second ago. Talking about the life swing. The key to any good cube, and I say this because it's one of my favorite archetypes, is to have a fun police. You gotta have a good red deck, because I went Entomb Griselbrand, reanimate Griselbrand, died on turn three.
Yeah.
The person I was playing against, God, what'd they do?
Fire Blast or something?
Well, no, it was like Goblin Guide hit you, he's on the play, Goblin Guide hit you, Bolt, something, and then like, what, he played some kind of ritual. And had Zealous Conscripts, and I'd already drawn seven. So I was trying to find an answer real quick. And so I'm like down to, I mean, I'm not super low. I'm down to, I don't know, like 11 maybe. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden he goes Ritual, it's like Metamorphose, Seething Song, Zealous Conscripts, take your Griselbrand, hit you with it, plus the Conscripts, plus the Goblin Guide, you're dead. I'm like, oh, that was fun. like I said, when you don't have four of all your answers, like in Constructed, the Griselbrand is a little bit more hit or miss, but it's still so strong. If you ever get to attack and connect with it, that would be hard to lose from, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
Primus and Hornet Queen, I think, are also good reanimation targets. Mm-hmm. Pretty fair. Like, Primus is a little bit more unfair, but like, once again, just Hornet Queen and flooding the board. The raw power is not what I'm afraid of. It's all of the other, I don't even know if intangible is the correct word, but the other effects of magic that in which you can draw cards and destroy permanents rather than creating more creatures. I think no matter, you could have a reanimation spell that costs a million mana. I'm sorry, that reanimates a creature that puts a million tokens in. Regardless of how many they put in or how much power they have, you can still win the game. If you play Woodfall Primus or Griselbrand and they draw, you know, their whole deck, or they blow up all your lands, the variance is just, well, the likelihood of you winning at all is just too low. I think that just makes it a bit unfun. But. Okay, so we're going to talk about, the next topic here is black and the multicolor pairings. So black, green, black, white, black, red, black, blue. And then our top 10 list of each black card. So starting off, I think we talked about black-green enough. You know, of course, Deathrite Shaman, Abrupt Decay, Marin of Klen-Noth, Pulse, Deed, all very strong, and they fit in either style of deck. You know, I mean, anything that plays black-green is always going to play these cards, which in some multicolor lists like red-white, you may not want. For example, you may not want, like, Boros Reckoner in your control deck or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big fan. Black green, I think, is my, you know, my favorite color in Magic, or favorite color combinations in Magic. So what is your favorite multicolor?
I'm a Dimir guy, so yeah, you know, black blue cards, and they all do very different things. You know, you got Tezzeret with the artifacts, and you got Ashiok with the, you know, kind of a exile mill where you might beat them with their own creatures, which incidentally is one of my favorite things to do, is to beat somebody with their own creature. But and then even like something just the value machine that is Baleful Strix.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what my other Dimir card
Shadow Mage,
Silumgar. Yeah, Dragonlord Silumgar is just a house. Like it's up there. It's one of those cards that's really hard to lose if you cast it and untap with it. So, because you're taking one of their things, obviously. Probably Dimir's my favorite. Huh. I'd pick color combination.
Black red is a really interesting color combination. I play OG Olivia, so Olivia Voldaren. But there's a bunch of really good spells in here. Grenzo is another pretty solid card. I've had a lot of fun playing. Kulagon's Command and Dreadbore, once again, are pretty sweet. So yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, with the black aspect usually provides some sort of removal or destruction in addition to being pretty good in mid-range. So go ahead, pardon me.
I was going to say, do you still run Rakdos Return? Have you ever run that?
I don't, but I probably should. I'm looking at my black-red section, and it's only four cards.
Oh, you got room. You got room. Yeah. You definitely don't have to worry about putting a black-red Planeswalker in there because there's not a good one.
Yeah.
So, that I can think of. Is there?
Tybalt, next set.
Next, yeah, that'd be great. I'm trying to think. Oh, like you're talking about Grinzo, I've had a lot of fun with him. I don't know if I'm going to keep him around as much because I do like the new Olivia as well. Mm-hmm. And a three drop, it's just a little bit more aggressive. Whereas I think of the old Olivia, even though it says four, you usually play it on six, so you can have him activated at least once. Mm-hmm. Then I actually play one of the very bad red black cards in Rakdos Cackler, which I don't put him in either red or black. He's just kind of this aggro creature that goes in whatever color I'm in, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Dreadbore, Terminate. Those things are all very good at what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then black, white, we have, you know, some sort of, I mean, I guess it's a kind of combination of everything here. We have some little bit of Reanimator, a little bit in Embryo Rites, a little bit of Destruction in Vindicate and Anguish Unmaking, which is technically Exile. Lingering Souls, just value and attrition. Same thing with Sorin. And then I also play Tide Hollow Sculler.
I love that card, actually.
Pretty reasonable card, I think.
And it counts as an artifact, which not a lot of people notice.
Yeah. And then on top of that, there's one, my big bomb in Orzhov is Obsidot, Ghost Council. I love this card. So good.
That's one of your pet cards, I know. It's a great card. I love that card.
There are so many times the life loss is huge, and you can do the old school Whip of Erebos tricks with Obsidot.
Mm-hmm.
Good times.
it also goes really well with one of my what's the other really good Whiff of Erebos card was Aetherwing, I guess.
Oh yeah, yep.
Yeah, like it as well. But yeah, I don't run Obsidot. I'm trying to remember what I think I was being silly and cutting down all my two color sections to a small number, and I just never have went back and put him back in. But he's a really good card. I like that one. And like we said, there's like three Sorns to choose from, depending on your Planeswalker restriction. Which you like.
Literally a million. Yeah.
Yeah.
But all right here. So top 10, our list for top 10 black cards. You start us off.
I'm going to change one that I had earlier. I had him at 10, which I really love him to Turok, but I'm going to say it's probably Arrow Falconwrath, the new one, the two drop. Because I just really like beating down with that card. It's
a cool card.
And it's like it's more of a fair card. You know, it's a creature that does combat damage and just happens to have a really good ability that says I discard a card I can get back later. And oh, I've got a 3/2 flyer, like a Delver, but not in blue. And it costs 2 mana. So.
And sometimes the discard is enabling something, which is really
cool. It's helpful in black. So that's good.
My number 10 is Slaughter Pact. Pretty reasonable card. I like playing it. The pact clause is not that big of a deal on that card because it's only 3 mana, and being able to tap out and get your opponent on a swing back or something like that, or like tap out and then they're like, all right, he's tapped out, play my big guy. Nope. So it's cool.
it also leads to really fun stories of the guy that slaughter packs a creature that doesn't affect the board, but like, you know, that's not really bothering him right now, but then forgets to pay for his pact and draws his card. You're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Tough luck. It's completely off subject because it's blue, but I did see a fight, a spell, a counter war in EDH. Somebody tried to play something. The guy went Force of Will. The first guy went back with Pact of Negation, and the guy looked at his hand and quickly goes, resolves. And then tap 4 mana and cast Armageddon. So, you know, gotta watch those packs, but man, they're good when they're kind of surprises when you're tapped out and they don't think you can do anything, obviously.
There's some funny stories depending on how I've played this in Vintage before and in EDH, depending on what you target with Pact, there are times in which I'll play like a spell, then you'll force, and then I'll force, then you'll pact my force of will,
mm-hmm.
or I'll pact your force of will, and then I'll respond by countering the original spell. So I still counter the original spell, or like whatever it is, and then pact still resolves because it's still countering that force of will. Or
yeah,
depending on how you layer the triggers. It's really interesting, and it puts, you know, it's kind of like awkward.
Yeah, like you don't ever want to like counter their pact. You want to counter the other thing.
Yeah.
Seems good.
On to number 9. My number 9 is Pack Rat.
Sweet.
Pack Rat is pretty
fair good. Fair and balanced limited card.
I don't think we need to say too much about this. It was in standard for a while, and then it showed up out of nowhere and just completely took over the meta. Pretty good card.
Let me see. My number 9 is probably should be higher on the list, but it's Recurring Nightmare.
Oh, nice. I don't have.
Yeah, it's. I just the card's so good, and of course you got the. It was in the same block as Survival of the Fittest, so yeah, that's a thing. But yeah, like I said, there's not many better things to be doing than sacking some little bitty creature for a huge monster and then being able to bring it back in case they do kill it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My number 8 is Ophiomancer. Card is, we just talked about it for 10 minutes. Pretty good card.
It's just like I said, you can never get out mana'd in that. Like your opponent's always going to have to spend more cards or more mana to deal with it. So. Tough to outvalue that card.
Yep. And even if they kill it, more than likely there's still a Death Touch Snake laying around. What is your number 8?
My number 8 is Cletus, Traitor of Get. It's quickly become my favorite new black creature, and it just filled a hole that I thought black needed. And it has lifelink, which, you know, definitely takes over the game. It's really hard to race.
Huh. Yeah, no, it's a cool card. I think I haven't played it only because I haven't cubed very much since Oath came out. But, no, I mean, it's a pretty reasonable card. I think it does what it does pretty well, and it's a very fair card. Like, it doesn't seem broken to me at all. It's not something that someone plays, and I'm like, oh, well, the game is lost. But in reality, you possibly have lost if it lasts too long, so I think it does what you want a 4-drop to do anyway, similar to Original Olivia. It's like after 3 turns of it being into play, it's like, oh, this is an actual problem.
Well, it just dodges. The key is it dodges so much removal.
Yeah.
Because it is a black creature and it's got 4 toughness.
Yep.
Granted, you know, there's swords and path, but not everybody plays white. So it's, and like I said, it does have some tribal synergies in either a zombie or a vampire deck, but you don't even have to do that. You just, you know, play it, and then cast one of your kill spells, and oh, by the way, I get a token because your thing died, and then I'm going to sack that thing, and now I've got a 5-6 life linker that you really can't deal with. So, mm-hmm. Really like it.
On to number 7. I have actually Dark Confidant. I know a lot of people, this may be kind of loose, and some people may not be too happy with this ranking, but Bob, I'll say it. I'll be the one to say it. Bob, I think, has slightly fallen out of favor in a lot of Magic and is not as strong as he used to be. It's a very, very good card. But in Cube, I don't think he's necessarily like the end-all be-all of card draw.
Well, it's funny because he's my 7 as well.
Oh, nice.
And I think he's probably too high.
Yeah.
Because like you said, he has fallen out of favor. But at the same time, like, if you build your deck around it, like, if you just have a bunch of, you know, 1, 2, and 3 drops in your deck and you got 40% land, and yeah, you might shoehorn a Consecrated Sphinx or a Grave Titan in there, like, yeah, sure, I'll take 6. Here's a Consecrated Sphinx. What are you going to do now?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just the card draws are so strong, but, you know, people get gun shy because not everybody wants to, you know, flip over a Blightsteel Colossus to their Bob trigger.
Yeah, do it though. Be strong.
Yep. If they'll do advantage, I'm game.
Yeah. My number 6 is actually one of your other, of your previous cards, and that is Recurring Nightmare.
Mm, nice.
Card is good. Good card is good. What is your number six?
My number six is, in my opinion, probably the best board wipe in Cube, and that's Toxic Deluge.
Oh, yeah.
Because it comes down as early as turn, you know, actually earlier with, like, Soul Ring, whatever. But, you know, on curve at turn three, and it costs life, but it gets around indestructible, hexproof, all that stuff, regeneration. And it's just, it's real efficient, and I really like it, and it's splashable. Definitely my favorite board.
And it's a very fair card because you have to pay life for it. So I don't, like, anytime someone deluges for, like, six, it's like, fine, okay. But all right, yeah, okay. But yeah, that's actually my number five.
Oh, awesome.
Sweet. That card is, like you said, I think the best Wrath, and potentially one of the best Wraths, if not the best in Wrath in Magic. I'm not exactly sure, but I know in Legacy, most decks that play black that need a Wrath always play Deluge just because you have the Emrakul thing.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. So, what is your number five?
My number five is Griselbrand. Mm. He should, you know, sometimes they put him higher, but there's a lot of spells I like better. Mm-hmm. Once again, he has a lot of, it's probably the highest ceiling of any black card, really, because it's just such an unfair card, you know, drawing seven cards for seven life and then hitting them and gaining the life back, and it's a flyer, and anyway, but, you know, it does cost eight mana. You can't always cheat it into play, but when you do, it's just, oh, it's so good.
The fact that it costs eight mana still bothers me.
Yeah.
Eight mana for a 7/7 that draws seven cards.
Yeah, for seven life, yeah.
Yeah, like, okay.
But they made Avacyn, didn't they make Avacyn an 8/8? Can't remember.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So, flavor fail.
My number four is Mind Twist. Mind Twist is one of the best cards in Cube if the environment around it is powerful enough to support it at its best. So, In reality, I think you can honestly play Mind Twist in almost any cube. You can even play it in a Pauper cube because it's not going to be, it's not the kind of card that, like, it scales just with its environment, and if you play it in which you have no ramp or no, you know, artifact ramp, it's like, okay, it got me for two cards. Sure. Yep. It's actually on turn four, and it's cost, or turn three, and it's costed correctly, unlike him, which is like, oh, okay. Like, turn two, I had, like, literally played one land, and now I'm down cards, so. Yeah.
Yep. It's my four as well.
Nice.
Yeah, if, like, I run all the mana rocks I can and just love the ramp, green ramp, colorless ramp, whatever. And, the random, it's just like, it's the gamble, a little bit of gamble in me. So, being able to flip, like I said, the mess up their entire game plan, you know, when they mulligan to six and they're like, yeah, I'll keep this. And then you all of a sudden mind twist them for three and all their plans go away.
Oh, yeah. See ya. My number three is Reanimate. It's a good card. Lets you bring stuff back to life. And depending on whatever it is. I mean, I've reanimated just for like not even like backbreaking things. Like reanimate for Mole Drifter. Okay.
That's good. I'm down with that.
Reanimate Snapcaster Mage to cast a spell. Okay. or my favorite reanimate Phantasmal Image. To secretly get back the giant creature that I want on the opponent's
side. Yeah, seems good, so you don't lose all the life. So, very good.
Okay. Your number three?
Is Liliana of the Veil.
Oh my god, I don't have it on the list. Okay, give me 1 second.
What do you mean you don't have it on the list? That's like one of your favorite cards.
Yeah. I'm going to also say that's three, and we'll just, like, bump off. I'm going to bump off Slaughter Pact and move everything down.
Okay, I'll allow it. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, Liliana, like we said, probably two or three, depending on your stance on DAC. You know, Planeswalkers of all time. Definitely the, I would say the best modern legal Planeswalker.
Yeah.
Because I don't really count.
I think she's
Prodigy.
So. I think she's actually better than Jace, depending on the meta.
Definitely.
Vintage and Legacy, possibly not, but there are decks that don't care about Jace, and there are decks that are like, okay, I actually can't beat Liliana at all. Like, the game's actually over. So depending, yeah. I mean, she could be one. I don't know. I think that's a little bit more conditional, but two or three I think is definitely pretty solid.
Yeah. And it's just a very black card, you know, discard, sacrificing, and then even more sacrificing in case you get the ultimate her, which most people skip by then, but, you know, you see it coming.
You know,
but yeah, great, great card.
And this may be biased, but I don't think Liliana is necessarily a very broken card. I think she's just very pushed. Like when someone plays Liliana, it's not like, oh, like the game's actually over. Unless you're playing Hexproof Boggles in Modern like me, and I just lost four auras and a creature.
Gotta play Griffspoon.
Yeah, Griffspoon, and I have my Dryad Arbor. But anyway, I mean, I think she's just a really pushed card. Like, her effects are symmetrical, and I think she's probably the only Planeswalker that I've ever played that third time I just don't use either of the abilities because I don't want to lose anything in my hand and there's nothing on board to really, like, it's not worth downticking.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those cards that you can just pass the turn without activating. And no, I didn't forget it. I just didn't want to do it, so we're good.
Yeah. All right, my number three is... No, two, pardon me. My number two is Demonic Tutor.
Yeah, that's actually my number one. Spoiler.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's definitely my favorite tutor and just amazing card.
Yeah, it's like you were saying earlier, it's always the second or a second copy of the best card in your deck. It costs two mana. I think, I don't know honestly if you actually first pick DT. It's a very good card, but I think there is an argument. I've read a couple things online saying that tutors are usually, not as important as the actual bomb cards that you want to pick. I mean,
that's fair.
It's an honest opinion, yeah.
But I mean, it depends on the pack. Like I said, if there's something in there, it's like, I don't really love any of these cards, but this will get the card that I love in the next pack.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I have first picked it before. I don't like it, but it's when I draw it. And the thing is, like I said, I'm a storm guy, so I often demonic tutored for my number two, and get all the value. So.
Yeah.
So, my number two is Yawgmoth's Will.
Oh, yeah.
Because just value. Like, it doesn't have to be a storm deck. It's better if it is, but, you know, I've just cast a value Yawg Will on turn five, get back the fetch land, play a cantrip, play a small creature, pass the turn, you know, just all that. And like I said, occasionally you just cast a bunch of rituals, cast Demonic Tutor for Yawg Will, and the Demonic Tutor again, and you cast all the rituals again. It's just, gross. So Yawg Will is a huge enabler for Storm, but it's just always a good card.
Yeah, and as a testament to Yawg Will, I no longer support Storm in my cube, but I play Yawgmoth's Will.
Just a good card.
And the thing I like about it too is that it's so skill intensive. Because there are times that it's like, okay, I need, you know, I have two cards in my hand, but I need the cards in my graveyard. But if I play this card after I play the Yawg Will, it's going to get exiled. So how can I, you know, and there's all kinds of things, you know, there's different lines to take about this, you know, this may be a bit better. But if I do this, I won't be able to play around Counterspell. But if it resolves, I win. But if I want to take the safe route, then I'll just put in this guy. And there are so many stories with me and my friends playing, just kind of chaining spells together and trying to figure out, like, okay, I have to draw the perfect card, and I got it, and, you know, Yawg Will. So, it's an awesome card, and it has a foil. It's one of those cards that's on a reserve list that made it through the judge period in that small window of time that they were printing stuff.
Yeah, it and Guy's Cradle are just some of my favorite foils that I have, so, just because they are hard to get.
Open it in my face, huh?
I didn't say that. Didn't mention that at all.
Soon.
Oh, another thing, just to watch out for, we were talking about Dark Petition earlier. Be sure you cast your Dark Petition while you still have two spells in your graveyard, because when they get exiled, then you don't get spell mastery, and you're three mana short, and you're like, I can't Tendril, then I just basically lose, because I find it. I have done it, and I've seen it done, so it's a thing.
My number one is your number four or five, I think. It's Big Daddy Grizzlebrand.
Ah, yeah.
Card is just sweet.
Yep.
One thing I'd hate about this card, though, is that the Abyssin Restored foils are just garbage. Have one. Every time I look at it, I'm just like, why did I trade for this?
Like, the only one I've ever seen that looked good, it was a Russian foil, and a guy got it when it was still legal in ADH. And it looked okay. I don't know what it was. Like, the foiling process looks fine, and that's the only one I've ever seen like that. I think I've also seen one Crater Hoof that didn't look like garbage. But yeah, I run the GP promo, which is like way more common, but I just
way better.
I'd much rather have it in there. So
I got a GP promo at SeaTac, and I traded it for a bottle of Jones soda. But I need one. I need to get one back. That's definitely, I think it's superior art and superior foiling. But anyway, that is our black episode. We took, of course, questions from Reddit. And Quad9's also posted your black cube overview section on YouTube.
Let's be honest, I was showing off my foils, but I did talk about the cards.
You want to see nice foils, you want to hear kind of just a little breakdown of what his cube is structured as, definitely check that out. And where can they find that video if they want to?
It was published on May the 4th, and it's on my YouTube channel, which is Quad Nines. It's Quad the number 9, S. You can also probably find stuff about it on my Twitter, which is Quad Nines, all spelled out. And if you just want to talk about how much you disagree with me, that's fine too. Just hit me up on there.
Yep. And we will have some sort of an announcement next podcast regarding the possibility of a cube giveaway. So stay tuned for that. My name is Zakeel. You can find me on Twitter at Zakeel Gordon. You can find me on YouTube at MerfolkMTG or MerfolkMagic5. I forget which one it is. It's one or the other. And I'm actually going to be putting out some new videos soon. I have a lot more time now, and yeah.
Don't tease me now.
So, thanks everyone for submitting the questions. I think every time we have a color episode, we're going to make the Reddit post maybe a day or two before and get some solid stuff. And, you know, we always like to hear back from the community. So thanks so much for listening. This is Skill and Drew for What's in the Box, and we'll see you next time.